Ecologic coming up.
You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth, then tell me where we gonna plant our seed. It makes me wanna cry for the children. Makes me wanna cry for Mother Earth. Makes me wanna cry for we could do. There's so much we could know if we listen to the earth.
Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. For Ken Gale, I'm Sally Gellert.
Me? And there's Joel Landy.
And I'm Joel Canepa.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for April 9th, 2021.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
When Ken first formed the Ecologic Collective, it was especially to serve for times when he wouldn't be available. Today he is away to pay respects to Jewel Bachrach, a beloved volunteer at WBAI.
Today, Ecologic Collective members Joel Landy, J.K. Canepa, Donna Stein, and I, Sally Gellert, present issues important to us. Donna?
Mega dams equal mega damage. Too little is understood about Canadian hydropower and its impact on communities and the environment in New York and Canada. We need to speak up to help divert disaster. As too often happens, the power of profit seeks to silence the power of and protection of people and the environment. The Blackstone, Champlain, Hudson Power Express cable build-out will release the PCBs at the bottom of the river, harming wildlife and food and water sources for communities up and down the river. Developers have never identified cable's entry and exit points of the route, and they will be taking land via eminent domain or to claim their route. The exact locations are being kept secret. People live there, and they are going to get a rude surprise. Activists fighting this are calling for energy justice and attempt to mitigate the climate crisis. There is no evidence to show this is clean, green, or low carbon, as they claim. Activists ask is that you call on Mayor de Blasio and Dan Zarrilli, his chief climate policy advisor, to withdraw from negotiations to procure this dirty power immediately. The 600 megawatts is all for New York City government, taxpayers paying from dams in indigenous country. We're being lied to. This is dirty energy. Let's not export our environmental injustice. For moral, environmental, and economic reasons, we demand our leaders stop negotiating with CHAPE and do not build the Blackstone Champlain Hudson Power Express. To hear more, tune in to Ecologic May 7th when Annie Wilson of the North American Mega Dam Resistance Alliance will be presenting. Archives of our show are on www.ecoradio.org. Next.
Hello, I'm Joe Landy. I want to tell you about my friend Bob Nagy. I've been creating a show that I've been looking forward to creating for quite some time. And, well, I met Bob back in the 1970s when we were both attending college at New York Institute of Technology and Old Westbury as communication arts student. I always noticed how smart Bob was and he knew media technology. He had the mind of an engineer. He could research and diagnose and design around ideas and electronic hardware. He could take things apart and put them back together with upgrade modifications, learning how they worked in a way that would let him share his knowledge with everyone else. And he was really good at doing that. Many years later, I reconnected with Bob and found that he had lived this engineering process in designing a life for himself. Change starts where you live. Ask yourself, why do you live where you do? Does it support the way you want to live and what you believe in? Could you research this topic and choose to end up where you would rather be? Well, Bob did. He believes in designed outcomes. Bob spent his young adulthood in Austin, Texas. He researched that it was a great place for young people to be, especially if they had engineering skills and an interest in music. So he moved there. After 20 years of work, which included teaching at the University of Texas and other engineering gigs, Bob left Austin for his research next destination, Hot Springs, Arkansas, where his designed life is off the power grid. He started a solar-powered radio station and has trained and led teams installing solar power arrays. He is known and well-respected technology personality on YouTube, covering a wealth of gizmos and gadgets, including electronic vehicles. He has a particular interest in ham on technology. Bob has a lot to say about designing a life which allows for a quality that is not austere, yet is not pushing the planetary ball in the wrong direction. I asked him if he had 20 minutes to talk about how it can be done. What would he say? For starters, he mentioned awareness and choices involving transportation, energy use, personal use of water, and what we eat. A little bit by a lot of people, Bob said. It's like dieting and making minor changes that become permanent. Bob shared that he knew what he wanted to accomplish at the age of 17. He designed it and executed his plan. Like Bob says, there's no port for a boat without a destination. I, for one, believe him. You can find out more about Bob Nagy by Googling his name and looking for his videos. And stay tuned to Ecologic, where he will be joining us during the coming week. I'm really looking forward to speaking with my friend Bob and having him share with us. Side comments, Bob was offered work at WBAI before he left New York, and he had a career decision to make. The way he tells the story, he thought that if he did not leave then, 50 years would go by and he would still be here. Yeah. That's how it is for many of us. Bob is proof that it does not have to be that way. I would call that purposeful, intentional living. Bob would probably call it common sense. Donna?
I think Sally is up next.
Sure. Environmentalists in the WBAI listener area must know the Delaware Riverkeeper Network. which has led the way to many regional environmental victories. Most recently, a final ban on fracking by the Delaware River Basin Commission. Since 1994, that riverkeeper has been Maya Van Rossum, also the founder of the group's program For the Generations, which works to pass green amendments to state constitutions across the nation. Some background. In the 1960s and 70s, industrial pollution was fouling land, air, and water everywhere. This was the time of the Clean Water and Clean Air Acts. In Pennsylvania, Representative Franklin L. Curry introduced this constitutional amendment, quote, "The people have a right to clean air, pure water, and to the preservation of the natural, scenic, historic, and aesthetic values of the environment. Pennsylvania's public natural resources are the common property of all the people, including generations yet to come. As trustee of these resources, the Commonwealth shall conserve and maintain them for the benefit of all the people." This was passed twice by the legislature and ratified 4-1 by the people in May 1971 as Article 1, Section 27 of the Pennsylvania Constitution. In 2013, environmentalists cited this amendment in their appeal of Act 13, a Pennsylvania law that would have allowed fracking in every community, overriding all municipal zoning restrictions. They argued that Act 13 was unconstitutional, as the government is responsible for protecting Pennsylvania's resources for future generations. And the courts agreed. Only Pennsylvania and Montana have such strong constitutional language. Other states refer to a clean environment, but as something desirable, as a policy preference, not as a protected right. However, there are currently environmentalists working in some 13 states to amend state constitutions, and New York and New Jersey are in the mix. The New York legislature has passed a green amendment, and it will be on voters' ballots in November. That may also be true in New Jersey, but only if the state legislature passes it with a supermajority by early August. Otherwise, it needs to be passed twice with simple majorities.
Great. The return of the zombie. New Yorkers said a resounding no this week to the bid by Williams-Transco to try again to build the Northeast Supply Enhancement, NESE, fracked gas pipeline under the seabed in our harbor. This project was denied last May by both the New York Department of Environmental Conservation and the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection on the basis of the irreparable harm that would be done to the waters and the teeming life that has returned over the past 50 years, from clams to whales, all of which would suffer from the copper, mercury, and other deadly contaminants that lie under the seafloor, thanks to decades and decades of dumping. So, Williams asked the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission for another 2 years to try to ram the project through our state, perhaps hoping for a different political climate, more favorable to the polluting, extractive, greedy fossil fuel industry. But there is indeed a different political climate in the national arena, with FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, seeming to be at last chaired by a more enlightened commissioner, someone who holds climate issues as important. The commission decides what pipeline projects are approved, and historically we knew it as a rubber stamp machine made up of hacks in a revolving door from industry to government and back to industry again. Looks like times are changing, but we know not to celebrate ahead of time. So the comment period ended on this Tuesday, April 6th, after a breathtakingly short 15 days. Activists in both states mobilized. The people in Morocco has stepped up. 21 state and local elected officials, plus 6 congresspeople, signed a letter to Richard Glick and the other FERC commissioners, written from the office of Scott Stringer, New York City Comptroller, opposing giving the time extension to the Williams Pipeline people. Thousands of comments were filed, and 3,000 people signed that petition in record time. Yeah, that's all great, but it's unconscionable that the people have to fight so hard to protect ourselves, our children, and the air and the water from these industries that consider human and non-human lives expendable for the bottom line. It's demoralizing to see something that we thought was, pardon the pun, dead in the water rear its head again. It's frustrating to know that this gas would be coming from the Frack Pants in Pennsylvania, a state once so beautiful for its forests and streams, and now riddled with abandoned coal mines and poisoned with fracking chemicals in the waters. It's frightening to know that frack gas is over 86 times worse for the climate than carbon dioxide and emits as much greenhouse gas as even coal. And what's more, it doesn't matter whether the gas even runs through these pipes. The company would still rake in a 14% profit on their billion-dollar price tag if they build it. That would be paid by National Grid ratepayers captive to the monopoly utility. In fact, National Grid wanted this project so badly. I'm sorry, wanted this project so badly that they imposed a moratorium on any new gas hookups, trying to force the state's hand, and the governor fined them $30 million for that tactic. So we expect a decision by FERC in the next 45 days, we hope, and that it will put to rest any further attempts by this Oklahoma-based company to build this damn thing. Sorry. If the time extension is granted, then we have more work to do, making sure that the NYDEC and the NJDEP stand strong and firm and say this dirty, expensive pipeline is not safe for our water.
Sally?
Yeah. Back in 2015, I had the opportunity to visit New Jersey's first wind turbine project. 5 land-based turbines at the Atlanta County Utilities Authority Waste Treatment Plant, opened 10 years earlier. It is currently approaching the end of the original 20-year purchase power agreement, and the state is hoping that it will soon be joined by offshore wind energy generation. 2 companies have bid to install offshore wind energy sites in New Jersey. Ørsted won the first solicitation for an 1,100-megawatt wind farm off Atlantic City, and has also bid on the second solicitation. So has Atlantic Shores, a collaboration between EDF Renewables North America and the New Energies Division of Shell Oil, proposing a 2,300-megawatt project. 4 more project solicitations are expected to be announced between 2022 and 2028. New Jersey has 344,000 acres of ocean allotted for wind farms. In all this activity, with all the hope for clean energy generation, there are concerns. On April 6th, a letter was sent to the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management and National Marine Fisheries Service by 1,665 members of fishing communities in every U.S. coastal state. They worry that current fast-track permitting processes do not meaningfully include the needs of sustainable seafood harvesting and production, and they request a transparent, balanced national offshore wind planning process. Concerns about possible effects of the new installations include a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration study finding that black sea bass are sensitive to the sound of wind turbines. Data on the effects of electromagnetic fields on some species of fish, including flounder, have been compiled by researchers in the USA and Denmark. Yet responsibly developed offshore wind power can coexist with and even improve recreational fishing, i.e., tour boats taking fishers out for day trips. Turbines create artificial reefs and current breaks, attracting many fish species. In Rhode Island, Block Island Wind Farm has been beneficial to local fishing fleets and the related economy, as mussels first, and then fish, have been attracted to turbine-based artificial reef structures. Fishing is basically unrestricted. Boats may not tie up to the turbines, but may navigate as they desire.
We have another reason to breathe easier in the sweetness of spring. The Indian Point's last reactor will shut down April 30th, 2021. This huge success story took away many years and work for many organizations. It was a long time coming. The real dangers of nuclear plants and why it wasn't safe nor economically viable shut it down. Grassroots organizations opposing the decrepit, unsafe plant with reactors literally falling apart. Ultimately, it is economics, the inability of the Indian Point nuclear plant to function without huge taxpayer and ratepayer subsidies got the owners to give in. There will continue to be issues to address of safe decommissioning, stopping the transportation of nuclear waste, and a just transition for affected workers and communities, environmental justice, and a clean, safe energy future for New York. Now we will no longer be creating more radioactive waste that endangers our future. Thanks to Riverkeeper, Hudson River Sloop Clearwater, New York City Environmental Justice Alliance, and other organizations, including elected officials like U.S. Representative Mondaire Jones, that brought us to this historic day. What we strive for now is renewable, low-carbon energy. There is new progressive legislation on the books, the New York State Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, passed May of 2020. This law is a model for the entire country. It puts us on our way to a cleaner, greener environment and economy. We will go into depth on our April 30th program of Ecologic with one of my heroines, Marilyn Ellie of Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition. Now, there will be a panel discussion April 30th, later after our broadcast. There will be questions from the audience that should help dispel a lot of the myths. National Geographic filmmaker John Bauermaster will be the MC and will present his 2013 short film, The Long Shadow of Indian Point. You can get this information on our website, www.ecoradio.org. Okay, and right now we have a few minutes longer. We're going to give some of our announcements.
Okay.
Sally, you had a...
Yeah. New Jersey Public Interest Research Group students, New Jersey Grassroots Organizing Conference for activists of all generations takes place this Sunday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It features sessions on a variety of popular topics and core advocacy skills for making effective change. For those who want to get up early tomorrow, you can hop on to the Across the Pond to join the Global Justice Youth Network at the aptly named We Rise 2021, 7 a.m. here on the East Coast, noon in Britain, focusing on climate action as well as climate and global justice. This is part of many events leading up to the COP26 Climate Fringe Week in September. JK?
This Sunday, weather permitting, we're going to meet in McCarran Park in North Brooklyn to do a bike ride to the fire department along the path of the North Brooklyn pipeline. That was National Grid's answer to losing the Williams pipeline. We meet at 11 o'clock at Bayard and Leonard on the corner of McCarran Park, and off we go. If it rains us out, we'll probably be back next week instead. So you're all invited.
Joel?
Yes. So to listen to the show again and any of our past shows.
Joel, tomorrow, early risers can virtually hop across the pond to join the Global Justice Youth Network at the aptly named We Rise 2021. This is part of many events leading up to the COP26 Climate Fringe Weekend in September. New York City Friends of Clearwater has monthly third Friday gatherings. All welcome. Live music and environmental discussion this month. Manna Jo Green, from the Environmental Director of Clearwater, will be the guest. That's April 16th. Please like New York City Friends of Clearwater on Facebook or email nycsloopclub@gmail.com. Looks like time flies when you're having fun, and it looks like we're out of time. Sally?
You can rely on Ecologic to bring you news of upcoming events and people who are making a difference. This is a most important role for Ecologic and WBAI-FM.
Listen to the show again and any of our past shows, and to get environmental news on a variety of topics, such as the fall of ExxonMobil.
Go to www.ecoradio.org. That's www.ecoradio.org.
Also, to find out when our shows are posted, those of you online, please sign up for our mailing list. And those of you on Facebook, please like our page. Enter Eco-Logic.
Go to www.give2wbai.org and choose Eco-Logic on the drop-down menu after you click on Next or call 212-209-2950 and say you want to become a member of WBAI Buddy.
Member in the name of your favorite radio program, Eco-Logic.
It's a win-win.
And a big thanks to our terrific engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Sally Gellert.
This is Joel Landy. I'm J.K. Canepa.
And I'm Donna Stein. See you next Friday, April 16th at 2:30 p.m.
For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Askia Mohammed. Here are some headlines. Workers at an Amazon warehouse in Alabama rejected unionization today, a win for the e-commerce giant, which waged a high-profile battle to prevent the facility from turning into its first union shop on U.S. soil. Those against unionization totaled 1,798 of the more than 3,000 total votes cast, while those voting for the union totaled 738. The margin of victory is larger than the roughly 500 challenged ballots, which would have been counted if they could have determined the outcome. Meanwhile, the labor rights media group, More Perfect Union, revealed Amazon executives coerced the U.S. Postal Service to install a private mailbox at the Bessemer warehouse so the company could pressure workers to mail their ballots from work and to monitor their votes. The trial of Derek Chauvin continued today with Lindsay Thomas, a consulting forensic pathologist in Minneapolis, testifying that George Floyd's death was, quote, due to the activities of law enforcement officers, specifically from the restraint and neck compression administered to the 46-year-old. Thomas, who ruled out that drug overdose was the cause of Floyd's death, added, "This was not a sudden death," end quote. Thomas's testimony came after an expert on the respiratory system testified that George Floyd died from a low level of oxygen and that the pressure from Chauvin's knee on Floyd's neck would have killed any person in good health. The defense is hoping to build the case that Floyd's drug use was the cause of his death and not Chauvin's knee on his neck. But that is not what the jury is hearing. Yesterday, a forensic toxicologist at the laboratory that tested Floyd's blood said the amount of methamphetamine found in his blood and urine would not have been sufficient to cause intoxication. The Centers for Disease Control has declared racism a serious public health threat, becoming the largest federal agency to do so. In a statement published on the agency's website, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky said, quote, "A growing body of research shows that centuries of racism in this country has a profound and negative impact on communities of color." Walensky noted the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic has been felt most severely in communities of color, which have experienced disproportionate case counts and deaths. The declaration is part of a new agency-wide initiative called Racism and Health, which the CDC said is meant to be a hub for its research into the effects of racism on health and efforts to achieve health equity. President Biden today asked Congress to authorize a massive $1.5 trillion federal spending plan in 2022, seeking to invest heavily in government agencies to boost education, expand public housing, combat the coronavirus, and confront climate change. The president's blueprint calls for a nearly 16% increase in funding across non-defense domestic programs, reflecting the White House's belief that bigger government and spending can close the country's persistent economic gaps. In Texas, an investigation